Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, no guest, no in-depth investigative report, but I've got a lot to share. This is the one program each week where we focus almost all the attention on health, healing, and environmental issues. For example, in-depth, the understanding of a simple energy-boosting herb from Dave Tuttle is called rhodiola, R-O-H-O-D-I-O-L-A. It does a lot for you. Also, maintaining your brain, the secrets of aging successfully. Apricot kernels, remember those? For those of you who go back to the 1970s and 80s, that was a big deal. Well, apricot kernels and bitter almonds have been proven to have some benefit. We'll go into that. Also, what happens when you're pregnant and you're exposed to magnetic fields? I'll get to that. The latest in-depth on chemotherapy and radiation, which are routinely given to virtually everyone who gets cancer, the vast majority, as a part of their treatment. In fact, just over the weekend when I was traveling and lecturing, a person said, well, the surgeon got all the cancer out and said I was completely healthy. All the studies show I have no cancer, but now they want to put me on a long series of radiation and chemotherapy treatments. And I said, and what does the science show? Can your oncologist, can your radiologist show you the proof that that therapy will actually benefit you? Or have you looked at the evidence from Dr. Goffman, John Goffman, MD, PhD, the world's foremost authority on the dangers of radiation, that a single x-ray at any time in your life is likely to cause cancer at another point in your life, whether it's a dental x-ray or a chest x-ray or an x-ray for a bone or a regular chiropractic x-rays? And he says, no, I didn't know that. And I said, well, you should. Well, I'm going to show you the latest information from Sayre G. Of Green Med Info on chemotherapy and radiation actually making cancers more malignant. Then, time permitting, from our environmental segment, are we headed back to the Dust Bowl of the 1930s? You can blame the banks if we are. And a very important commentary from Ronnie Cummings. He's that organic farmer who, along with several hundred thousand farmers, sued Monsanto about their genetic engineering seeds. He wrote a short commentary called Friends to Block Your Right to Know What's in Your Food. And I'll talk about the California ballot initiative to label genetically engineered food. Quote, is a serious long-term threat to the viability of agriculture biotechnology. Defeating the initiative is GMA's, Grocery Manufacturers of America's, single highest priority this year, end quote. Whoa, they just made that statement about 3 weeks ago. Well, who's saying that we should not have the right to have labeling of our food? So if we want to buy something genetically engineered, we could. But if we don't, we'll know it and not buy it. Well, that's the Grocery Manufacturers Association, the multi-billion dollar trade association. And they represent the $1.2 trillion big food industry led by supermarket chains, Monsanto, animal drug companies, the multinational food manufacturers, junk food restaurants, all of whom rely on the use of these dangerous chemicals and pesticides and animal drugs and GMOs to produce cheap, contaminated food. So I'll get into that because I just came back from California today helping to drum up support for the November initiative, Proposition 37. And I know we have a lot of people right now watching and listening to this program from California. The documentary is on its way. It'll be there in 4 weeks. I have a full team. In fact, we're working day and night to get it done. But I've been filming. I filmed in Canada last week, in India, in France. Every day we're filming somewhere to bring you the latest on why we should not buy genetically engineered food, why it's dangerous, what it really does. And I have all new information. So anyhow, just the big word on this. I'll be reading his commentary, but they are probably going to spend between $70 and $80 million to convince California voters, we don't need to know if your food is genetically engineered. Those are just scare tactics by a bunch of non-scientific nut jobs. Well, we're going to push back on this. We believe that all food should be labeled. So as you see, we have a lot to get to, and I want to talk about the 15 dirty big pharma tricks that rip you off and risk your health, all for profit, from alternate Martha Rosenberg. We have a packed show. Let's begin. I can remember when I was working at the time doing anti-aging research, but downstairs there was a lot of research being done at the Institute of Applied Biology in cancer. These are all orthodox scientists and physicians affiliated with them. They were looking for the drug that would either help a person overcome addictions, that was one area, overcome pain, that was a different area, or help stop cancer. One of the scientists said, you know, there is a guy who's doing some really interesting work with some apricot kernel extract called Laetril or amygdalin at Sloan Kettering, at Dr. Sugiera. He is the most senior scientist there, the most respected, but no one's going to touch that. I thought, why? And I was told, well, because it can't be patented. It's a natural substance. So what? And the guy looks at me, a doctor, and he said, Dr. Berman, he said, Gary, you can't be that naive. You know that it has to be a profitable patented drug for any chemotherapy company to take it on, and then it becomes a miracle drug, and then all the money and research go behind it. You give them something they can't make money on, they're going to deny it. So I went down to Sloan Kettering, I arranged an interview, and I met with Dr. Sugiera, and I looked at all of his articles. There was no internet at that time. I looked at all of his articles from Flower Fifth Avenue Hospital, where I would go daily along with my brothers Howard and Steve, and we would do all this research. We had tens of thousands of papers, and you had to pay a nickel a page to have them photocopied. And you had to go to the books, the peer review literature. First you had to know what you were looking for, then you had to sit there at this table and read it. Then you would tag the paper, you'd fill out a form, you'd go over and they'd photocopy it, and we'd come back every day with reams of stuff. This guy had done a lot. So I asked him, I said, what's about this apricot kernel stuff? He said, well, I have been able to shrink ascites tumors and other tumors in rats that were given amygdalin, but it's not going to be supported here at this institute where I've been for decades as the most senior scientist. And I said, why not? He then said, because I guess nobody can make a profit from it. And then there began an attack against it. I would later meet a man who came forward, came up to meet me. His name was Ralph Moss. And he said that they're covering up the truth about cancer and its treatments and what works and what doesn't work at Sloan Kettering. He was, I believe, the second in command of their public relations department. And he said, I'm not going to take this anymore, the politics of this. So I called Steve Dunleavy, a friend of mine who was one of the senior editors at the New York Post. He met in my apartment on West 86th Street at the time with Ralph Moss and broke the story. And it was a front page story about the politics of cancer. And that began a real hard look at the cancer establishment. I would go on and write a series of articles. One was used by 60 Minutes to do a profile piece on Dr. Lawrence Burton, and another was done by Judy Moses over on 2020 on ABC, excuse me, on Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski. Gabe Pressman did a 10-part series for my original work, and others followed suit. So for about 15 years, the world suddenly realized, gee whiz, there is a real battle in the world on cancer, but it has nothing to do with cancer. It has to do with those who believe that there's nothing but politics, profit, and careers made by supporting a position doesn't work. Chemotherapy and radiation certainly doesn't work and doesn't have the proof on its side. But doctors within the establishment who come up with innovative, natural, non-toxic methods, they're pillared, they're ostracized. And that's a piece of the story. Here's the latest. Thought you'd find this. This is from Green Med Info, a very good publication, from a Dr. Veronica Desnires, and says this, I'll quote it. In September of 1983, my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He was dead in 6 weeks. I remember the anguish and the frustration as the medical doctors offered no hope. I had been in practice for only 3 years, and the internet was non-existent back then. But I recall going to the library to do research about having cancer without healing cancer without having toxic drugs or radiation. I also called cancer clinics all over North America and Mexico, trying to find a solution to my father's illness. Thus began my quest to understand how to heal and prevent cancer. One treatment that stood out at the time was amygdalin, the product that is produced from crushed apricot pits. Amygdalin, by the way, that's spelled A-M-Y-G-D-A-L-I-N, is not to be confused with Laetril, also known as B-17, which is a semi-synthetic patented version of amygdalin. Laetril and amygdalin have been used successfully around the world for the reversal of many types of cancer. The Hunza tribes in the Himalayas are virtually cancer-free, which some have attributed to their daily consumption of apricot pits and millet, both of which contain amygdalin. The apricot pit contains a compound called glycosides, which are a combination of sugar and cyanide, which takes place here is what we call selective toxicity, a specific enzyme that is produced in large quantities by cancer cells triggers the sugar breakdown that releases the cyanide. The cyanide is what kills the cancer cells. But why are healthy cells not affected by the cyanide? Healthy cells have a specific enzyme called rhodanase, which renders the cyanide harmless. How's that for another amazing healing miracle? Another way that amygdalin affects cancer cells is that it inhibits angiogenesis. Angiogenesis is the formation of new blood flow as the cancer cells are growing and forming a tumor. If the blood flow to the tumor is blocked, the cancer cells die. Amygdalin also suppresses inflammatory responses, which lead to multiple diseases, including cancer. Specific studies have shown how amygdalin induces a programmed cell death in prostate cancer cells, human colon cancer cells, and leukemia cells. Amygdalin even inhibits the growth of Epstein-Barr virus, which often induces tumor growth. The anti-tumor promoting activity of amygdalin and other compounds was studied in both in vitro and in vivo assays. While administered specifically for cancer treatment, a wonderful side effect is that amygdalin actually helps relieve the pain that is often associated with aggressive cancers. Laetril can be administered orally in pill form, or it can be injected into a vein. Typically, the administration of Laetril spread out over a long period of time. Unfortunately, because of manipulation of laboratory studies conducted in the 1970s, amygdalin and Laetril are not readily available in the United States. There are literally hundreds of known plant-based cancer treatments that have saved countless lives. Unfortunately, the masses are not informed of the many non-toxic ways to heal the body. However, websites like greenmedinfo.com continue to inform and educate. Hopefully, the tide will slowly turn in order to make these modalities part of a harmless cancer protocol. Now, just my thoughts on this. You're not going to be able to find amygdalin. I wouldn't suggest eating bitter almonds or apricot kernels. I think that would be not good at all, because I have known people who've gotten sick doing that. What I'm suggesting here is that I would hope that now there be a rejuvenation of research, legitimate independent research, like Professor and Dr. Sugiera did back at Sloan Kettering, before it was all stopped and before it was politicized and before there were witch trials. I know they went after Dr. Krebs Sr., who was doing a lot of work on Laetril at the time. And So that's just one of my wishes, is that we see really independent good research again, so that with independent studies, we can see once and for all, what does it do? This is an interesting study from Harvard University. And this is what it says. And this is released by Reuters. Harvard study finds fluoride lowers your IQ. And this was published in Environmental Health and Perspectives, which is our government publication. Quote, Harvard University researchers' review of fluoride brain studies concludes, quote, our results support the possibility of adverse effects of fluoride exposure on children's neurodevelopment, end quote. Quote, the children in high fluoride areas had significantly lower IQ than those who lived in low fluoride areas. That's directly from the study. So, now, what makes this interesting? If you go to either website, progressiveradionetworkwebsite.com or garyandall.com, you'll find an article. The original article was written over 30 years ago, and we can thank Dr. Michael Schachter from Suffern, New York, who at the time was the president of the effort to fight fluoride. Other individuals over the decades have headed the New York Coalition Against Fluoridation, or New York State Coalition Against Fluoridation. I looked at all the scientific articles, and I did in-depth interviews with one of the founders of the cytochemistry division of the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Dean Burke, also probably the most knowledgeable person on the planet ever concerning the dangers of fluoride, Dr. John Yamianis, or we called him Dr. Y. He was a biochemist from Ohio State University. Both of these gentlemen wrote a paper showing that we have about 15,000 to 20,000 people die each year from cancer that came from drinking or using one part per million, the normal amount you're going to find in a glass of fluoridated water. They backed up their studies and went on a worldwide debate tour. They sought out those people who were pro-fluoride, and they just demolished them. They also were the leading witnesses in trials around the world, a famous one in Scotland, one in the United States in Pittsburgh, that again showed the body of scientific evidence in a court of law that fluoride was toxic. So there's volumes, hundreds of articles showing the dangers of fluoride. And it doesn't work, as we've been led to believe in any case. So I put all this together, years and years of research, into a paper called The Fluoride Fiasco. It is updated every 3 months, so it's current. And it has all the references, all the footnotes, so you can see my sources. Read The Fluoride Fiasco. It has been used countless times by individuals who then petition their local communities to defluorinate the water. And I've had hundreds of emails from people who showed that using the scientific article and the references help win that battle. So, fluoride is bad. We've known it's bad for a long time. I would not use fluoride in supplements. I would not use them in water. I would not use them in mouthwash or toothpaste. They are dangerous. Next up, chemicals, and this is from Science Daily. This is mainstream science. It's published in Environmental Health Perspectives. And it says this, chemicals and personal care products, that's your skin creams and shampoos, and they increase the risk of diabetes in women. Quote, a study led by researchers from Brigham and Women's Hospital show an association between increased concentrations of chemicals in the body and increased risk of diabetes in women. These are endocrine-disrupting chemicals that are commonly found in personal care products such as moisturizers, nail polishes, soaps, hairsprays, and perfumes. They are also used as adhesives, electronics, toys, and a variety of other products. Here's what it says. Quote, women who had the highest levels of the chemicals monobenzyl, B-E-N-Z-Y-L, phthalates, and monoisobutyl phthalates had almost twice the risk of diabetes compared to women with the lowest levels of those chemicals. Now, the problem is that most people don't look at the ingredients when they see something they don't understand. It's got a chemical name. They must think that it's safe because they use it. Bioorganic. There are hundreds of quality products now, soaps, shampoos, conditioners, that do not have any of these endocrine disruptors. They have nothing harmful, all good. So spread the word on that one. That's important. And this is from Nature Scientific Reports, a research done at Kaiser Permanente. Quote, in utero exposure to magnetic fields associated with an increased risk of obesity in childhood. And in fact, a 69% increased risk of being obese or overweight during the childhood compared to lower in utero magnetic field levels. So that's important. Keep away all magnetic pulses from the developing fetus. Now, to our herb of the day, this herb is rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A. Now, why am I going to share this with you and special information from Dave Tuttle? Because it's very important. The reason that rhodiola is important because it has the ability to increase cellular energy. And who today couldn't use some extra energy? Everyone can. And why? Because as we age, the ability of our cells to produce energy is limited. You have in every cell of your body, you have tiny little energy factories called mitochondria. Now in the heart and the brain, you have thousands. But in other muscles and other tissue, you have less. When you eat the bad diet, when you eat an excitotoxic diet like monosodium glutamate, when you're drinking alcohol, when you're exposed to radiation, you then cause these mitochondria to be disrupted, and hence they go through what is called mega-channeling, and they lose their capacity to create adenosine triphosphate, ATP, and that means you don't have the energy. It'd be like taking a spark plug out of your car. You're just not going to run the same way. So the older we get, the less mitochondria we have, and hence we slow down. But there's no reason for that, because we can rejuvenate ourselves. Now, I've talked many times on this program about coenzyme Q10. It is a great cellular energy enhancer. It can help people at the 1,000 to 3,000 milligram range with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, and dementia. And boy, is dementia really, oh my goodness. In fact, it is so bad that I've changed my priority of bringing out some documentaries. I have 7 finished, just sitting on the shelf. I finished in the last 12 months, and I'm waiting for books to accompany them to get them out. And I was speaking with someone I've known for a long time, this gentleman. And within the same half-hour conversation, he asked the same question 5 times. And I finally said to him, are you aware that you keep asking me the same question? He said, no, I didn't. I said, yes, you did. He said, I didn't. I said, then we should put a recorder when we have a conversation so you can see it for yourself, because the people with dementia frequently don't know that they've had a conversation, met someone. There's someone well-known in America and respected. And we were having dinner the other night, and this person said, wow, great restaurant. I didn't know this existed, and it's right in the neighborhood. It's a good restaurant. It's right beside my place uptown. It's called Candle Cafe. Nice, nice vegan restaurant. Nice people own it, too. I support small business people and who are doing something good, and they are. And after dinner, I said, what do you think of the food? Person couldn't remember the food they had just had, but said it was good, but couldn't remember. I've taken that person to that restaurant 4 times, and yet they had forgotten. This person's suffering from advanced dementia, but is in denial. This is a separate person now. As a result, every conversation we have, it's as if we've never had any previous conversation. So it's not easy to work with people with dementia because they're absolutely going to argue with you that they don't have a memory problem. They do. So coenzyme Q10 is one of the very first things I would recommend, but I would also add to that acetyl-L-carnitine, and I would also add NADH at higher doses. But then I'd also add rhodiola, because most people have never heard of rhodiola, and most people don't use it. You don't see it up there on anyone's must-use list. And what I'm going to do is share some insights as to why I believe it's really important for us. And there's been a lot of research on it. It's not that they don't have good quality studies out there. They do. But almost all the initial studies came from Scandinavia. It's called a golden root because of its many therapeutic properties, and it grows in dry, sandy ground at high altitudes in Arctic areas in Europe and Asia. Now, if you were looking at a traditional folk medicine approach, the herb has been used to fight fatigue and depression. It increases physical endurance. It's great for athletes or anyone working out. It enhances your work productivity. For men, it's really good at treating impotency. And if you have problems with sickness, especially altitude sickness, it helps there. It's in the same adaptogen family as adaptogen as ginseng. And it can resist. It can increase your resistance to biological and chemical and physical stressors. So anyone under stress should be using it. Now, it was the old Soviet Union scientists that studied it extensively, in part to evaluate its potential benefits for military personnel and athletes participating in international competition. But a lot of research got out showing that just with a standardized extract, you can do a lot of good, and especially used on a daily basis. It's non-toxic. And there have been a lot of human studies, and what we know is this. The human body has three main ways of producing energy. During the first 30 seconds of high-intensity physical activity, energy demand is powered by a pathway I just mentioned called ATP-CP. That's adenosine triphosphate. This involves an exchange of phosphate groups between ATP, adenosine triphosphate, and CP, creatine phosphate, in cellular mitochondria. Energy is produced when ATP is split, leaving a molecule with only two phosphate groups known as adenosine diphosphate. Now, creatine phosphate and creatine monohydrate comes to the rescue by donating its phosphate group to ADP, thus resynthesizing an ATP molecule and allowing it to be used again for energy production. I realize that's a little scientific and probably unnecessary, but I just want you to know there's a real scientific basis for using it. At the end of the day, the resting level of creatine phosphate declines as we age, and there are reductions that contributes to the greater fatigue, mental fatigue, physical fatigue, but it needn't be that way. We can reverse that. And also it helps you if you're under stress. And by the way, who today is not under stress? Because when you're stressed, you're going to secrete extra adrenaline, you're going to secrete extra cortisol, and that will give you temporarily a little spike in energy, but then it depresses your energy level after that. Remember, stress is produced whenever an outside stimulus disrupts the body's normal biological and psychological equilibrium. But over millions of years, your body has evolved a sophisticated, versatile complex of integrated systems that is able to detect the slightest aberration in this equilibrium. And once detected, these aberrations must be corrected promptly to prevent damage to the body. For most people, stress is a fact of life today. Today's world is marked by frenetic pace, everything's super hyper, must get done. And of course, just look at the mounting financial, environmental, occupational, and other pressures, and even social alienation, like for older people, and isolation. And these pressures are often exacerbated by factors ranging from a bad diet. I mean, for most people, if you're depressed and if you're lonely, you're not going to eat a good diet. You're going to eat a bad diet, comfort foods from your childhood. And this makes stress reduction an essential part of any extension of a healthy life strategy. So when a simple a stimulus evokes a stress response, the sympathetic nervous system or the sympathetic adrenal medullary system is activated. And this causes the brain to send a message down the spinal cord to the adrenal medulla, signaling it to release a chemical messenger called epinephrine. And epinephrine results in a nonspecific whole-body stress response. Additionally, a chemical messenger called norepinephrine is released by nerve cells onto particular glands and muscles, contributing to numerous physiological changes that prepare the body for the fight-or-flight response. Your heart rate and your blood pressure increase, your white blood volume is diverted away from the skin and to the deep muscles of the legs, respiratory rate increases, the pupils dilate, fat and carbohydrate reserves are mobilized to provide energy. All these things happen in a millisecond to prime you in case you are seriously threatened. So important is it for our body to maintain equilibrium that it also recruits a compound of the endocrine system called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. Now, this axis is mainly involved in the long-term stress response. And the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis begins in the hypothalamus. That's a switching station in the brain that receives electrical and hormonal impulses from various central and peripheral and automatic systems. And when the body's equilibrium is disrupted, the hypothalamus secretes a corticotropin-releasing factor, which triggers a release of adrenal corticotropin hormone into the pituitary. And this hormone, in turn, travels to the adrenal cortex, where it stimulates the secretion of a group of compounds called corticosteroids, the most important of which is cortisol. And these corticosteroids promote enhanced carbohydrate metabolism, mineral balance, and ensure an adequate supply of energy and proper fluid balance during the stress response. Now, and here's where rhodiola comes in. It helps enhance this whole process. And so you're going to have more energy and you're going to be healthier. Now, I went into a little more depth than what I normally would, and I apologize if it sounds a little technical. But sometimes people will say, you make everything sound too simple. Well, the art of sharing information as a teacher is to take very complex issues and make them simple. It does no good if I have to take you, as I would a student of mine, through the whole biochemistry. If I started explaining the Krebs cycle and the biochemistry of vitamin C, it would just go over everyone's head. But don't for a second think if I suggest that an herb is used or a vitamin is used, if there's not ample science of how it actually functions in the body. There's lots of that. So use that. It'll make all the difference in the world. And finally, on this subject of health, I want to tell about the brain, the latest. Now, this, again, is not me. This is coming from mainstream science. This is Science Daily, Trends in Cognitive Science. I'll quote this. Quote, aging may seem unavoidable, but that's not necessarily so when it comes to the brain. Or so say researchers who have just published a peer-reviewed article in Trends in Cognitive Sciences based upon counterintuitive evidence that it is what you do in old age that matters when it comes to maintaining a youthful brain rather than what you did earlier in life. Quote, although some memory functions do tend to decline as we get older, several elderly show well-preserved functioning, and this is related to well-preserved youth-like brain. This was done at the university in Sweden, a professor of neuroscience. And, quote, education won't save your brain. PhDs are as likely as high school dropouts to experience memory loss with old age. Now, what this says and what it means are this. I'm always doing new projects all the time. Right now, I'm trying to put together a veterans village, an actual village where 30 vets will come. And in that village, they will have holistic nutritional counseling by nutritionists, certified nutritionists. They'll get psychological counseling from board-certified psychologists. They'll get whole-body therapy from board-certified medical doctor. And in a quality environment where they can come with their family, and they'll have the best food, juices, detoxing, hyperbaric therapy, and the kind of therapy that if they were coming to see me one-on-one that I would provide for them. And my hope is that by helping these vets and filming this whole process and having meticulous medical records and behavioral records and nutritional records, at the end of 12 months or a year from the time it starts, that we will have such good results of getting them over post-traumatic stress disorder, getting them off meds, getting their health back if they have Gulf War syndrome, getting them to be able to return to society in a positive way and return to their families and their loved ones. And you would have to be with me when I travel around the country, and in every town I go to film, I look for the homeless vets and I find them. Always out of sight. Always somewhere that the average person wouldn't go. And I see that they're suffering from the abuse of alcohol and drugs, or they're alone, they're fearful, they're victimized or beaten. The women vets, of which there are over 67,000, are routinely beaten, harassed, raped, and they have no help, none. So if this works, if we're able to help a person regain their functions, their behavior, then that shows it can be done elsewhere and everywhere. And then turn that over to NGOs, the governmental agencies, and most importantly, turn it over to George Taylor and the vet groups. They share my plans from all my lectures and workshops where I charge a fee. In those that I charge a fee, most time 90% I don't, but where I do, I'm going to support George Taylor's group down in Florida, because there are 16,000 homeless vets there in the woods who really only get a little bit of voluntary help, and it's too small to help everyone. So my hope is that more people get help, and my hope is this will happen. Now, what's the purpose of this exercise? It also is helping me as a human being. Why? Go back to what that article just said. As we age, and we actually are aging after the age of 27, so if you think 27 is young, in your brain, it is not young. You're actually in aging at 27 and beyond. We put ourselves into a circle. We focus on what we've mastered, and everybody has mastered many things, and we stay there. We get into our comfort zone. I believe that we should master new thoughts, languages, skills, learn to play instruments, get out of our habits, and that causes us to be optimistic. Just the act of doing something new, changing careers. Yesterday I gave a lecture in California. I was with a group of people for almost 10 hours yesterday. And my takeaway message was, you have a right to start over. You have a right to throw away the book of your story, of your pain, why you can be negative or toxic or pessimistic or manipulative today because it happened to you at some point from friends or family, more often your family. People don't realize, they have a hard time realizing that what their father or mother did to them, they're doing to other people. They don't see it. Others do. I'm not like my father. I'm not like my mother. And people around them say, yes, you are. But then they go into this denial because maybe what they're seeing is the abuse that their father or mother gave them. They're then passing that abuse on repeatedly to other people and in complete denial that they become an extension of the energy, what is called epigenetic energy. I'm not going to go into all this now. I did my lecture on this yesterday. That our DNA literally become hardwired by the age of 6. And by 10, we're totally coded. For the rest of our life, about 95% of what we do, think, and feel every day will be based upon the tapes laid down by the age of 10. Now just imagine, how many experiences did you have with your mother, your father, aunts or uncles or school teachers that was negative, that impacted you in a negative way, either emotionally or in some way that demeaned you, depreciated you, violated you? That then becomes recorded because you couldn't intellectualize it at the time, so you emotionalized it. And when we emotionalize it, it goes into the subconscious. And the whole idea of the subconscious is it is sub our awareness. So we're not aware of it. And that's why people do the drugs and alcohol, or that's why people need to succeed. That's why so many people will go to work on Wall Street and work like demons. I mean, hours that are 20-hour days sometimes, because they're so insecure, they're going to prove to someone that they are lovable. But that's not what they're trying to tell the world. They're trying to tell the world they're smart, they were valedictorian, they got their Phi Kappa Beta, and we should respect them. No. You go back into almost every highly successful person's life who is push, where they don't have balance, and you'll find an insecurity emanating from those subconscious tapes that we're now acting out on. Other people who will know you and know your parents will say, "You're just like your dad." And you'll say, "How dare you say that? I'm not like my dad. He was, you know, he was an abusive person." And you won't see you're also the extension, the epigenetic extension of your dad's energy. Just remember what I said, that two guys in the last week, both I've known a long time. One happens to be very famous and loved. The other is just a regular guy. Both have dementia. Neither will accept they have dementia. Neither will do anything about it. Neither can be responsible because they don't remember what they have forgotten. And it's this is the stage, and it'll only get worse, and it'll end up in Alzheimer's. I'm going to do what I can to get the people who are in their lives daily, their family members, to be aware of this, and even surreptitiously to begin to put the kind of nutrients they need to rebuild their brain chemistry into their health drinks each day and get them to do a health shake. You don't give up on them. But also, understand that most people, and this is why I don't, and I realize this will affect those who have been in AA. If you've benefited from AA, good for you. But the people I've counseled, it didn't benefit them. So I had to look for a different approach. And the approach I'm looking at that has a very high success rate of helping people get off any of the things they consider addiction, and hence I don't look at drugs or alcohol or sugar as genetic defects, as your biological blueprint is telling you're going to be addicted. Nonsense. A blueprint is a blueprint. You know, it has no power. It is merely a structure you're going to use. It is the vital life force. It is the mind, and it is the actual DNA, not your genetic predisposition. 95% of all conditions have nothing in the world to do with our genes in any case. And the 5% that do, like Huntington's and a few others, we can impact them in a positive way most of the time if we understand to get this early. Otherwise, a lot of people say, I'm an alcoholic because it's in my genes. Nonsense. That's not true. You made some bad choices. But it's almost impossible for people to associate their self-sabotaging of relationships, their social alienation, with being an extension, the epigenetic extension of their parents. But that is the fact of it. So when we choose in our moments of clarity not to be reactive from our subconscious, but to be proactive from our mindful consciousness. Our mindful consciousness, we're mindful of it. It's something in this moment. There's no stress, there's no hate, there's no anger, there's just gentleness, there's a joy, there's happiness, there's passion, there's excitement. In that moment, we can select something that challenges us. And we're being challenged in a positive way. It excites us. We're growing. We're not aging. That's so important. And this study verified that. That's why I did that. I will share with you Martha Rosenberg's 15 Dirty Big Pharma Tricks That Rip You Off and Risk Your Health for Profit on an upcoming program. And I will deal tomorrow, because it's an extensive study, on chemo and radiation actually making cancer more malignant. I do, however, want to get to Ronnie Cummins. Here's what he has to say. I'll quote this. This is from Alternet. By the way, Ronnie Cummins is that farmer who is in the War on Health documentary, which you can download if you go to Gary and All TV, just Gary and All TV, which today I just saw when I got in about, I think, 595,000 people went today. Quote, "The California ballot initiative to label genetically engineered food is," and then it's important for us to focus on it. Now, what he's saying is support Proposition 37, the California Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food Act. The outcome of that vote will likely determine whether the U.S. will one day join the nearly 50 other countries that allow the citizens of their country to choose between genetically engineered and non-genetically engineered food through the enactment of laws requiring mandatory labeling in genetically modified organisms. The election is 3 months away, but the battle lines were drawn months ago, lining up against the consumer's right to know and throwing plenty of money into the fight. Is a long list of industry front groups and food conglomerates and biotech companies. And near the top of that list is the powerful Washington, D.C.-based Grocery Manufacturers Association, a multi-billion dollar trade association. They represent a lot of people, including Monsanto and McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Kellogg's, Hormel Foods, J.M. Smucker, ConAgra, and many others, over 300 companies. So good for you, because remember, these same people opposed always the control of our food by the people. For example, in 1993-94, they opposed labels on dairy products derived from cows injected with Monsanto's controversial bovine growth hormone. In 1998, they supported, along with Monsanto, the use of GMO seeds, food irradiation, and human sewage sludge in organic agriculture, spawning a nationwide organic consumer's backlash. In 2001, along with the chocolate industry, they lobbied against legislation in the U.S. Congress that would have exposed slave-like child labor practices in coca plantations in Africa. And also in 2004, they helped defeat a California bill that would have set nutrition standards for school food. So they're going to fight. They have money. We have each other and networking. So spread the word. If we win in California, we're going to take this initiative to every one of our states. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, come back, and hear your thoughts. Time for you to talk back. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And if you're listening over telephones, and you can anywhere in North America and Canada, that number is 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. If you want to know how many people are listening, well, the last figure I got was 68,000 people who've used over a million minutes just recently. Lots of people listening. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Hey, what's up, man?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Big party, man.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love.
Like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. If you miss a program, go to our archives, and tomorrow evening, 7 p.m., a dynamite show with four of the leading authorities in the world about the truth, about the media and our government's approach to the Syrian conflict. You'll want to hear that on the Progressive Commentary Hour, the most downloaded hour that I know of in all of radio. Let's say hello to people now who are standing by. We have Peter from Media, Pennsylvania. Hi, Peter. You're on.
Media, Pennsylvania. I'm calling because I've been following your work and, of course, Matt Stein's work on the solar storms. And a friend of mine and I are very, very serious about this. We have...
Oh, did you just disconnect him? I think my engineer just disconnected him. Please call back. All right, let's go over and say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann. You're on.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes. I'm sorry. The other gentleman just called in, and he was just disconnected. All of our lines are packed. Go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah. Well, geez, we have gotten barraged with emails here about a piece that was just on tonight on 60 Minutes on sugar. And lo and behold, Sanjay Gupta is suddenly realizing out of nowhere that sugar is bad for us. So I have a couple of emails of people who wrote in about this. One is from Ralph. He says, I just watched the piece on 60 Minutes. And he says, and I'm really angry, not in 60 Minutes, but because I stopped using sugar in 1972 after reading your book, The Complete Handbook of Nutrition. And there was another book that you wrote in 1974 called Body Pollution. And there was a huge chapter on the effects of sugar on our body that creates disease. And everything that you said in the book was on the show. Primarily, one of the things that the show brought out was that it could be, it's very much connected to cancer. And he says, I became a vegan and lost 40 pounds. He reversed type 2 diabetes. And he's following your work on the internet. He lives in Louisiana. And he says, the thing that impressed me most was that you had over 100 scientific references. So he says, so how is it that Dr. Gupta acts surprised that sugar is bad?
It's simple. Dr. Gupta represents the physical presence, and in an articulate way, a personable way, of what orthodox medicine sees as the boundaries. If it's official, he will report on it, but he will never challenge it. So if he is told that vaccines are good, safe, and effective, then he cannot speak with anyone who might challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines or any other thing, as if these are credible sources, because they couldn't be official. What made 60 Minutes unique, I didn't have a chance to see it, was that 60 Minutes is an official network and therefore is considered an official source. It's like the New York Times. It is to our consciousness what the New York Times is, a paper of record. So once they say that it's official, then it's official. We've been saying for decades that sugar is bad. A man named William Duffy wrote a book called Sugar Blues. I had him on the show many times. He was married to a friend of mine, Gloria Swanson, and he did a great deal of good to promote the danger of sugar. I had a big chapter on sugar in my book and a lot of other things back in 1972 in the Complete Handbook of Nutrition. And I've written a big article that's up there now that shows you everything is wrong with sugar, and it's all fully footnoted. But mind you, when I was on ABC, I was a thorn in their side because ABC Radio Network, for all those years on ABC and ABC Network both, that was official. Therefore, they had a hard time debating the issue and would intentionally stay away from debates. But now I'm not on ABC, then they can say, well, that doesn't count. So only official information that is accepted by someone within official positions is ever considered legitimate, and then reality starts. As if all the scientists, all the physicians, all the individuals, all the lay people who gave up sugar, all that didn't count. Oh, yes, it did. It just shows you how far ahead of the curve the progressives in this country and around the world are. And the younger people are the ones who are really ahead of the curve. We have tens of millions of young people sharing insights and information that are, you won't read about them or hear about them in official news outlets for long periods of time, because they represent a threat, an economic threat, a political threat, or a standard of evidence threat. So good for 60 Minutes to finally coming to the realization 35 years or 40 years late, but at least they're there. And that will cause a lot of consternation within the official medical and nutritional and dietetic fields. Thank you, Luann. We did get Peter back. Peter, we're on short time, so go right to your point, please.
So the solar storms and the planning for it, will there be any opportunities available that is not yet released to your audience that maybe you haven't announced yet, where we could actually have a source that
yes,
we could...
Yes, in October, closer to the times and still a safe distance from the major solar storms,
okay.
I will be doing a seminar, an all-day seminar, an 8-hour seminar in New York, but not now. be okay. patient because we have time, and I'm working on a lot of different places that people would be able to go to and are at least associated with, so they'll have a plan A, plan B, and plan C. So that's coming
Very
at you,
well.
But that's coming
Excellent.
In the fall, all right? We're out of time for our program today. I want to thank you all for listening and for watching. Stay tuned now for Michael Rupert, who's coming right at us in about 3 minutes. Let's go over and say hello to Michael and see what he's got coming. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. Carolyn Baker is back with us again. She's extremely popular, and this is a real good time to bring her back. We're going to talk about a really hard thing for a lot of people, but it's necessary now. It's called letting go. How to do it with grace. And Carolyn has been, you know, she's a therapist, and she's working with a lot of people who are families that are splitting up on whether people believe that the world is going to go back to normal and those who actually see that something is actually collapsing here. So there's a lot of emotional stuff out tonight, and there's a lot of class being shown, and that's what we want to talk about.
Well, great. We're going to look forward to listening to you right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Take a few moments and then come right back with Michael Rupert. Thank you all for listening.